Steps Forward, a podcast designed to help us grow as Jews, just a few steps at a time. In each episode, we will meet one interesting and thoughtful person with one or two pieces of useful advice to give. Our goal is to be both spiritually ambitious and humble. We really believe that we can accomplish great things if we take it just a few steps at a time. I have the pleasure of getting to meet online, virtually, a holy Jew in the Holy Land, Rabbi Yaakov Wolf. First of all, Rabbi Wolf, thank you so much for giving me a few minutes of your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm a huge fan of this podcast. I'm an avid listener, and it's a pleasure to be here as a guest and recording with you.
Really, really an honor and a pleasure to have you. So for our listeners who don't yet know, Rabbi Wolf has a wonderful podcast called the Shtark Tank Podcast. First of all, Rabbi Wolf, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself and your podcast before we jump into it?
Sure. So I am in my 11th year at Yeshivat Keren Biavne. I started as a Hesder student and then got married and joined the Kollel. And it's really been special and wonderful, and I treasured every second. But in my 11th year, as I started to think about what life might look like beyond yeshiva, I thought about it a little bit before, but not too seriously. As I started to really think about it seriously, I started having a lot of questions about the world of the Beis Medrash and the world outside of the Beis Medrash and work and parnassa and learning and all of these things. So as part of that journey and exploration, I decided to start this podcast because I felt that I wasn't the only one who thought there was a lack of resources in this area. I had a lot of friends who, when I spoke, also felt a little bit confused and they could use a little bit of chizuk and help and advice. So I figured to take some of the conversations I was having anyway with role models of mine, with mentors of mine, and put them in podcast format and put them online. And Baruch Hashem, the response has been very good.
I think it's really, really, really amazing. And I've been very interested following you and learning from you and your guests. First of all, I recommend it to everyone. Everyone should be interested in it. And I commend you. I am so jealous of everything you're doing here. I think it's absolutely amazing. So yisher koach. I'm so impressed and really bowled over. So of course I identify a lot with what you're trying to do. You're trying to, I think, help us get a better sense of how we are supposed to be much more than good Jews, aspirationally amazing Jews. Real Ovdei Hashem, people who can really proudly say, hey, I work for God even as I go to work. And I was wondering, can you tell us a little bit about this? This is a very pressing question. How do I go to work and turn that into something that really serves as a springboard towards my relationship with Hashem? Or how do I turn that itself into a religious experience?
Yeah, you phrase the question very, very beautifully, and you've had some great episodes when you think about Avodas Hashem. So you think of being an Eved, a servant, and committed, and so you had a great conversation with Rabbi Jeffrey Sachs. And when you think about Avodas Hashem zu tefila, as the Chazal say, and you had a great episode with Rabbi Leibowitz, and Avoda zu Torah, as the Rambam quotes in Sefer HaMitzvos, and you had a great episode with Rabbi Zukir about Talmud Torah, all these things are central and fundamental to what it means to be an Eved Hashem. But again, as I think forward to my time beyond yeshiva, I think to myself, is it really possible that our Avodas Hashem is limited to the trips to shul, which are usually early in the morning before we're that awake, late at night when we're already really tired, the time we try to be kovei itim? Those are certainly central parts of our Avodas Hashem, but is there really nothing to be said for all of the many, many hours and lots of energy invested in our workday, in our professions, in our careers? And how do we think about that within our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And as my father likes to point out, it's probably not stam that we call the same word our avoda, and here in Israel, our avoda. So I was trying to understand that connection, and that's sort of what I've been trying to research and understand through conversations and also through learning in Maror Makomos and research I've been doing in the books and in the library as well.
Fabulous. Okay, and the truth is, even as you say all this, you know, I'm very struck by the fact that I think that there is a sense of continuity here in your story. You are a person who right now you're grappling with, okay, how do I serve God at work? You served in Hesder, which means you're already a Jew who said, okay, I'm going to serve Hashem not only by going to study Torah, but by serving in the army that defends the Jewish people, and the Jewish land and represents God. So I want to know, practically speaking, what bit of advice do you have for someone who is going to the office? They have to start the day. They have to get up early. They struggle very often to make it to Minyan. What can they do in the morning, at their lunch break, during work? What can they do to turn it into something that is overtly a spiritual and religious experience?
Wow, that's such a big question, and there's so much to talk about. But I think the first thing to think about and to have in mind, and I think Kavana here is very, very important, and your mindset, your goals, why you're doing what you're doing is very, very important. And so the first idea that I think is helpful to think about is there's a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. And the Mishnah says that a Mesachei Bekubya is Pasul Leidus. And the one of the explanations given is that if someone is full-time gambling, he's not Osik Bishuvo Shel Olam. He is not taking part in the development of society. Now, it's not so clear from that Mishnah, like, okay, who says there's a mitzvah to be involved in society? Who says there's an Avera in not being involved in society? Well, I think there's a basic idea, which is alluded to by Rishonim, and I don't think we're going to get into exactly the lumdus of it right now, but I think it's very simple. I think it's Parshas Bereishis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates man, and he tells him, Pru Urvu Umitlu Et Haaretz. And it doesn't just mean having children. It also means taking care of a world that children can grow up in, that needs stores, and that needs real estate, and that needs banks, and all of the things around society are part of the system that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be developing so that we should be accomplishing that fundamental mission of Pru Urvu Umilu Et Haaretz, being Osik Bishuvo Shel Olam. This fundamental idea, which is right there in Parshas Bereishis, is what I believe drives the Mishnah and the Halacha that says that one who's not actually working is not Osik Bishuvo Shel Olam, and that's such a bad thing that that person will be Pasul Leidus.
Fabulous. So, first of all, I remember reading about this, I think, for the first time as a teenager in an essay in By His Light, where Rav Lichtenstein not only talks about the necessity of settling the world and building the world as part of the mitzvah of Puravu Mulat Haaretz to fill up the world, but he actually, I believe he talks about the Mishnah of invalidating someone as a witness if they are professional gamblers. And at the time, I thought, well, I don't know. Like, what's so bad about that? You know, this guy, he just wants to have a good time. Maybe he's making a living. Who says he's not giving any tzedakah? Right? Let's assume that he's a tremendously charitable fellow who just happens to be a professional poker player. Why not? I think they have the fancy bracelets. So I personally don't think I could carry it off, but if they can get away with it, go for it. So could you tell us, you're going to go to work, you're going to think to yourself, okay, this is my kavana. I have in mind, I am doing what God requires me to do, to build the world, to take part in the economy, to make it a better place. What is the contrast between what you're doing and the person who makes money doing something that's fundamentally not productive? And what other things might be in that category? Is someone who plays games professionally, like video games, is that equally unproductive? You know, would the sages also forbid someone like that from testifying in monetary questions? Do you mind just reflecting on that for a moment?
Yeah. Wow. That's such a pressing issue. And so many people present this issue of not feeling like they are finding meaning in work. They have careers, they have an income, but they don't necessarily feel fulfilled by their work. And there's a lot there. And I think you're touching on one of the issues. So I think maybe just to backpedal half a step, and you mentioned this, and I just want to drill down a little bit, which is that I think the system HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up fundamentally is that money is a sign of value. So I need money for my family, but most people make their money by providing value to others. So this is actually a lesson I really gained through the podcast by actually speaking to people in the business world. And a lot of them told me that this is a fundamental understanding of what you're doing at work, is if you think about your work as providing value to others, and the payment is just there to remunerate you and to keep you going and make yourself sustainable. Rav Dessler has a very beautiful formulation of this in Michtar Melio in Kunshas HaChesed, where he says, this world is really about chesed. And okay, you need to be sustainable in yourself, but that's the fundamental structure of the world. And it creates a synergy between my own needs to feed my family and the needs of society around me, to have doctors and lawyers and people selling food and people selling clothing. So that's, I think, the fundamental understanding. And I think that that's still true in many, many cases today. Now, as you alluded to, today's generation is unique in many ways. I think the greatest example of the sort of bizarre situation that we find ourselves in is the cigarette industry, Now, could you imagine paying someone for the rope that's going to hang you? To paraphrase, I think an old joke that the communists used to make about capitalism. So here you could make a parnasa by selling people their own death sentence, by selling them cigarettes. There are many other examples of these type of products in our economy, which are unsafe or unhealthy and are being sold, and people are profiting a lot off of them. So that's a big problem. And then you mentioned the gaming industry or professional athletes. It's also unproductive. I'm not going to pass in for anyone, but I certainly think that there are professions out there nowadays which a Bentar should not be doing. I think a person should think about how their work is contributing to the society around them. There's another phenomenon where we have these big corporations and a little individual doesn't feel his impact. So that's different because you are part of a big machine that could be doing great things for society. And it's just not so easy to feel that and identify with that on a day-to-day basis. But fundamentally, you're part of a big organization which is doing important things, providing products, providing services. So this is part of the complexity of the age that we live in. But I think it's important to remember the fundamental way HaKadosh Baruch Hu structured the world with the synergy between my income and my value to the world outside.
Okay, I love that. Fabulous. Okay, so I'm going to, before I hit the office, I'm going to remind myself of the synergy between my needs and what I contribute to the world. And that's going to inform, first and foremost, my choice of what kind of work to get into. Okay, can you give me one more thing? Let's say I'm at work now, I'm engaged in it. What's something I can do to maybe regain a lost sense of purpose and importance in my work?
So I want to ask you a question to set this up. If you were to imagine a TV commercial, or maybe a movie or something on online, and it had the caption, "This is the life." What would be the scene that you would imagine that goes along in American culture, in the Western perception of "this is the life"?
I am thinking about a beach right now. Okay. There's a palm tree.
Good. Thank you. So Baruch Shekivanti, and I think most of your listeners would probably identify with that. This idea of real life, you really made it when you're sitting on the beach, there are waves washing up, you have a nice cold drink. That is the life. I don't think that the Torah accepts such a concept and such an understanding. I think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave each and every one of us talents and interests and strengths and intellect and all these things in order to make the world a better place. And that work ethic is a little bit, as I mentioned, against what maybe some of our colleagues or people sitting at the desk next to us, you know, for them, they're working in order to relax. They're working in order to get to retirement, to get to the next vacation. We, I think, have the opposite approach. We might need to relax and recharge to have energy to work. But fundamentally, this idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us strength, gives us energies, and we're commanded to use them for the betterment of the world is something that we should remind ourselves, even though sometimes work is hard, sometimes work is stressful and tiring. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us all of these strengths to use them and not to sit on the beach and just have a cold drink. And if I may, I would like to add that this idea is something that I've been thinking about a lot recently. Unfortunately, 4 weeks ago, I lost a brother-in-law, Eli Moshe Zimbalist, Hashem Yikom Damo, in Gaza. And he had a very strong work ethic. He was not, in any sense, a chiller. He would even come back from Gaza and have a Friday morning, and he would use it to help a friend who was doing renovations. He was actually a very semi-professional or professional builder by the time he joined yeshiva at the age of 18. So he would go to his friend's house on a Friday morning, again, on his leave from Gaza. He wouldn't just, you know, sleep in all morning or go to the beach all day. He would go and work. He had this work ethic. He had talents. He had strength. He had energy, and he would use them to help other people. So that's another idea, which, you know, when we're working hard and it's not always easy, to remind ourselves that if you're, you know, this is the life, is actually using Adam L'Amal Yulad and working hard to make the world better.
I think that's an incredibly beautiful thing. And I really, first of all, I know it's such a searing, painful loss to your family and to your broader family and to Klal Yisrael. And for those who have not seen any of the eulogies from Eli Moshe's funeral, I mean, what an example of a really beautiful human being. And this really does add to it. I think it's incredible to have someone heroically going out to Gaza and then coming out and just saying, okay, well, what am I going to do now to make the world a better place on my day off, my day of rest? That's really, really incredible. I do want to ask you, I think one of the things that this makes me think about, and I want to take this out of the discussion of of Tzadik Viralo. I don't want to talk about that, of, you know, the problem of evil and why do bad things happen to good people who really deserve so much more. But just in our own lives, one of the things I think that is coming out of this conversation is that when I think about my own role in the world, so Hashem wants me to work, to accomplish, to strive, and inevitably that takes a lot of investment and toil, right? Like you said, amal, right? It takes toil and it's a lot of work. And this is true, I think, no matter what sector you're in. Every day we get up and you have to push, 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 push. And maybe surprisingly, the goal, the end in mind is not retirement. It's not a beach. It's to accomplish. It's to produce. And what this means to me is that discomfort, suffering, toil is wrapped in to the package. That during my day, every day, when I meet toil and stress and I feel tired and overwhelmed, that's something where I should probably turn to myself and say, this is part of it. This is worthwhile. I wonder, what's your relationship with that idea? The just necessity of suffering in day-to-day production.
So it's a really interesting question, and there's a lot of ways we could take that. But I think one insight that I've thought about a lot is the fact that some people will tell you, you know, working is a curse. Because Adam HaRishon, he was in Gan Eden. He was basically on the beach. And then when he sinned, he was sent to work. And I think a careful reading of the Psukim, according to most Mefarshim, is not like that. The basic condition was La'avda u'lishamra, which most Mefarshim understand kipshuto. He was meant to work and tend to Gan Eden. The curse was Bezeata pecha tochal lechem. The stress involved in work is part of that curse. And if you read the Rambam carefully in the end of Hilchos Malachim, he says that La'asid lavo, he doesn't say that we're not going to work. He says there's going to be enough economic plenty that work is going to be very easy. And sometimes I think about whether we're really close to that. You know, when you see technology making work potentially very easily, it's already a lot easier today than it was back in the day. Physically, it's a lot easier. And there are ways, productivity tools that can theoretically make life a lot easier. So that's something to think about, whether we're really on that curve and in an age where the stress of work is going to become less and less and allow us to devote more of our time and energy to the core avoda, which we opened with, the Torah and the tefillah, because this hard work can be very, very distracting from our Talmud Torah and from our tefillah and from our ruchnius. That's an obvious reality that I think we're all familiar with. So that's a thought that I'll maybe leave your listeners with to ponder and discuss with their family, their friends.
Okay, wonderful. I really love that. I do not want to leave without talking for at least a moment about the Beit Midrash that's being constructed and renovated in your brother-in-law's memory. Can you just talk to us about that for one moment?
Sure. It actually connects to our discussion because Chazal say that Rehoves HaMalacha, it's a Mishnah in Perkei Avos, and the Avos Rav Nasan says, Shelo Sharta Shechina BiYisrael Ad She'asu Malacha. The Ashras HaShechina in Klal Yisrael is due to the Malacha. Why? Because the Pasuk says, Va'asu Li Mikdash V'Shachanti B'Socham. So the toil and the work and the efforts that are involved in the Binyan Beis HaMikdash or Binyan Beis HaMedrash is the key to having Ashras HaShechina. Now, since Rabbi Razer's Nofei HaShemesh Shul opened, it opened 14 years ago, approximately, in a school, but they actually got their structure started 7 years ago in a Simcha Hall, which is the first floor of the eventual shul. And so it was completed, the first stage, around the time of Eli Moshe's Bar Mitzvah, which was his first woodworking class, and he really got into it. So he ended up building dozens, if not hundreds, of pieces of furniture for the shul. Shtenders, wooden Aron Kodesh, and a massive deck and sukkah pergola outside. So besides for the fact that the Zimblos family is very invested and my father-in-law is on the building committee, but Adi Moshe himself loved davening. He loved shul. He always came on time. He was very respectful. He was a gabbai, but he himself toiled and put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into Rabbi Rosner's shul. And we thought it would be a fitting tribute to, in his memory, to finish the project which he had started and he was hoping to see completed. He dreamed of being involved in building this shul and other shuls as well. And this is a great opportunity because people around the world want to pay tribute to his legacy. And so actually, as we speak, we've already crossed our fundraising goal. We've had 500,000 hugs from around the world, $500,000. But people still want to help. People want to salute a hero who gave his life for Am Yisrael. So we've opened up a bonus round, which will go towards furnishing the Beit Midrash that we're dedicating in Eli Moshe's memory. So it really all came together. The donors also, I will mention and give a shout out to the mayor of Beit Shemesh, who's been helpful in expediting all of the zoning process, which has been very, very hard in the past. So we're really hoping to start building very soon. There might be a chance that we'll have it ready by the time his first yahrzeit comes along. That might be a little bit optimistic. We can put a link in the show notes, and anyone who wants to pay tribute in the bonus round, we love that as well.
Yeah, I have to tell you, not just a sense of loss, which I think it's in a, you know, it's something that has sort of reverberated out, you know, the memory and the loss of Eli Moshe Zimbalist, Hashem Yikom Domo, but I feel sad that I never got to meet him. And, you know, when I saw the link, so obviously I wanted to be part of that. And you know, we made a donation. And that's also why I was very happy. It's the wrong word, but I was appreciative of the opportunity to ask you about the Beit Midrash and his memory. I wasn't sure if you'd want to talk about him. Very reasonable. But I do want to go. I want to see this place that's going to be in his memory. And if you can't make a donation, so listeners, if you are in Beit Shemesh and you have the opportunity to go see this Beit Midrash, which will be in memory of Eli Moshe Zimbalist, Hashem Yikom Domo, so take that opportunity. That's all I can say.
Yeah, we could. I'm happy to post my email in the show notes, and listeners are more than welcome to reach out, to ask questions, to visit Beit Shemesh, to visit Har Herzl. We're happy to do our little part to perpetuate his legacy and to talk about him in whatever settings it would be appropriate and meaningful. So the listeners are more than welcome to reach out on that regard as well.
Okay, Rabbi Wolf, thank you for a whole lot of insight, and for just a lot of things that you're leaving us with. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for taking 3 steps forward with me. There is a wide and bright horizon ahead. Please review our podcast, and if you learned something new, share it with a friend. More episodes are on the way.